It is time to focus our attention on Israel.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If you want boots on the ground and you want them to be our sons and daughters, you got 14 other choices. There will always be a Bush or Clinton for you if you want to go back to war in Iraq. But the thing is, the first war was a mistake, and I'm not sending our sons and our daughters back to Iraq.
That was the voice of Rand Paul at the presidential debate last night. This is the voice of Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on The Line of Fire. And I'm coming your way live from New York City, right out on Long Island in Valley Stream. Had a wonderful morning with a couple of hundred pastors, leaders, believers, dealing with moral cultural issues and with, 30, 40 kids, 50 kids maybe, in the balcony from the high school, the Christian high school, who came to listen as well. And we're doing a special rally tonight. This is Valley Stream. I'm going to be teaching how do we deal with what the Bible says about homosexual issues, how do we deal with the cultural propaganda that's coming our way, and then preaching and stirring your heart, 7:30 tonight. Everyone listening to me in greater New York, 7:30 p.m. will be starting. There'll be a brief time of worship, and then it'll be turned right over to me to speak, to teach, to preach. You'll be stirred. Your hearts will be encouraged. At 7:30 tonight, 12 East Fairview Avenue, 12 East Fairview Avenue in Valley Stream. Do your best to get out. It's going to be a memorable night together. And I'll be signing my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. We'll have copies, and I'll be signing that tonight as well. So last night, I watched the debate. It was a very interesting setting. I didn't get to see all of it, but watched a good part of it, or segments of it, on a boat, a yacht, I guess, that does a cruise around Manhattan. And it was sponsored by the two major stations in New York owned by Salem Communications, WMCA, as many of you are listening to me right now, on 570 and 970, The Answer, which is conservative talk radio with folks like Dennis Prager and Michael Medved and Eric Metaxas. And it was for clients and sponsors and so on, and some of the radio hosts were there. I got to spend some time with my friend Kevin McCullough. And then the debate was airing, so we get to watch some of that. So I want to hear from you a little bit later in the broadcast. I'm about to be joined by a dear friend and colleague from Israel. But if you watched the debate last night, what was your thought in terms of who would you trust most dealing with Israel? It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, so that's what we're focusing on. If you watched the debate last night, what was your take? Who would you most trust when it comes to Israel? Who did you feel would be the truest friend of Israel? Just want to play another clip for you, and then we're going to talk about a whole lot of other things. Joey, let's grab clip number 10. Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz, weighing in on Iran. Again, if you listened to the debate last night, in your view, who sounded like the truest friend of Israel? Or maybe whose track record and words would give you the most confidence? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Let's listen to Ted Cruz.
This deal on its face will send over $100 billion to the Ayatollah Khamenei, making the Obama administration the world's leading financier of radical Islamic terrorism. This deal abandons four American hostages in Iran, and this deal will only accelerate Iran's acquiring nuclear weapons. You better believe it. If I am elected president on the very first day in office, I will rip to shreds this catastrophic Iranian nuclear deal.
Good for him. Amen to that. Was it John Kasich? Governor John Kasich, who said, if we know that Iran's giving any money to terrorists, then we cut this thing off. We already know that's where it's going to go. We already know. They've said it. They've reaffirmed it. Where's the mystery? 866-34-TRUTH. Back with my dear friend and colleague, fellow worker from Israel, Ron Cantor. We've got a lot to talk about. You know what's happening on the Temple Mount in Israel?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That's the sound of 150 Jews who took part in a prayer rally being called the Defiant Prayer Rally by Israel National News in the Muslim Quarter in Jerusalem's Old City. This is earlier today. They were protesting ongoing Arab violence in the capital, particularly the brutal beating of a Jewish yeshiva student during Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, earlier this week. Muslim leaders are saying that Jews are inciting things by their presence on the Temple Mount. And clip number 11 ties in with this as well. This is an attack by an Arab mob in Jerusalem. This is very fresh news, very fresh events. And then we want to talk to Ron Cantor, get a perspective from Israel as to what's going on. Clip number 11.
On the eve of the holiday, I came back from Shacharit, walking towards my dorm. As I was walking down the street, which leads towards the Western Wall on the Temple Mount, one Arab threw a water bottle at me. Another Arab threw something else. They started kicking me. I started running away and more Arabs joined. They pushed me down on the ground at least twice, injured me. They all attacked me, all the Arabs who were there, while shouting, Allah Akbar, and in blood and fire we will redeem Palestine.
Things are very volatile right now in Israel, in the Middle East. It's not just what's happening with Iran and things like that. There's a lot going on. My dear friend Ron Cantor, long-term co-worker living in Israel with his wife, Ilana. Ron, welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you?
Good. All right. It sounds like you are all the way in Israel talking to me through a funnel. So can we do it? Is there any way we can get you a little louder or more direct?
How about now?
Okay. That's definitely better. Sounds like you're halfway across the ocean. Good, good.
Okay.
hey, Ron, I'm with Steve Malazzo. He has a phenomenal work here on Long Island, many works they've planted. It's extraordinary to see what God's done. But you and Steve were students. I was a young guy. You were young guys, students of mine on Long Island decades ago.
Well, grade him for me. We went to Bible school, 1985 to 87. Make sure you tell him hello for me.
I will absolutely do it, Ron. So first, can you give us the latest? What's happening right now in Jerusalem? Why all this controversy about the Temple Mount? Who started what? Fill us in.
Well, there's really so much to say. I mean, the Temple Mount, just for folks who don't understand, they hear words, but not everybody understands what the Temple Mount is. If you can envision in your mind the Western Wall. Now, a lot of people believe that the Western Wall is the last remaining wall of the Temple. But actually, there is, as Yeshua said, Jesus said, not one stone will remain upon another. The temple is completely destroyed. The Western Wall is just the wall of the retaining mount on which the temple stood. That's why we call it the Temple Mount. So the Western Wall is underneath the Temple Mount. Now, on the Temple Mount, back in the about 1,000 years ago, the Muslims built some mosques up there. One is called the Dome of the Rock, and then the other is called the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And the Al-Aqsa Mosque is what all this present controversy is about. Now, understand that the Temple Mount, there's a lot of debate on whether or not that really has anything to do with Islam. There are many who say that Jerusalem was never important to the Arabs to the Muslims until the Jews came in. Then suddenly it became the third most holy site in all of Islam. Now, for the Jewish people, and again, I'm just as an observer, I can pray to God from my basement, and I know he hears me. I don't need to be at a wall. I don't have to put papers in a wall for God to answer my prayer. But still, from the Jewish point of view, the Western Wall is the holiest site of all of Judaism. So, and the Temple Mount is where the first temple stood, the second temple stood, and eventually where a third temple will stand before Yeshua comes back. Now, what happens on top of the Temple Mount is you have all this Muslim activity. But Jews are supposed to be particularly tourists, allowed to go up there, and now they can't do very much. In fact, I remember, kind of a funny story, we lead tours to Israel, and if anyone's interested, go to livingstonesisrael.com for our April tour. But we lead tours to Israel, and I was on the Temple Mount with a group of people from America, and I said to them, I said, you know what? I don't care what they say about this area. I know what was here because the Muslims say that there was a temple there. And, you know, Yeshua is going to return here, and I don't care. We're going to pray, and we're going to – I was really bold, Dr. Brown, and the tour guide came running at me saying, shut up! What I didn't know is that the Muslims have that entire area microphone.
Oh, boy.
It is illegal. It is illegal for a Jew to pray up there. What I was doing was engaging in illegal activity. And I'd like to tell you that I was super bold and just began to pray at the top of my lungs, but I actually heeded her advice, not wanting a conflict.
I think that was wise.
I might do something different today. I'm a bit bolder. But anyway, the point is that so Jews are very limited in terms of what they can do up there, even though it's the most holy site to Judaism. Now, the other day, just before Rosh Hashanah, 15 Jews were on the Temple Mount. They needed a police escort. Now, imagine about 100. These are people who blow up stuff. Now, I'm not saying that every Muslim is a suicide bomber, but typically, when people begin to yell at you, Allahu Akbar, they're not up to really good intentions. And so about 100 Muslims surrounded them, many of them youth, and began to chant Allahu Akbar over and over again. And you can imagine, that would be terrifying. Again, that's the last thing that a Muslim will say before he blows himself up. So it was very scary, very eerie, and so more and more Jewish people have been harassed since being up there. They have been pelted with rocks. They store up there firebombs, Molotov cocktails. The police found the other day two pipe bombs. And so finally, the police said, we've had enough. This isn't right. We can't have people being harassed. So they went up there, and they began to clear it out. They wanted to get all the Muslim youth, the violent Muslim youth, out of there. And they locked themselves in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And so the police had to come in and get them. Now, if you went into the mosque, you would see piles of – it's a beautiful mosque on the inside, like mosque. But it's carpeted beautifully. Jordan, King of Jordan paid for it. And you see – I have pictures – of a young man sitting by a pile of rocks. Now, I'm not talking about little stones.
Right.
I'm talking about rocks, the kind that can kill you.
And the kind that didn't just pile up there by themselves. So they're stockpiling rocks and other weapons.
Right, as well as firecrackers. And you might say, oh, come on, Ron, what's the big deal about firecrackers? Well, if you're on the Temple Mount and suddenly you start hearing firecrackers, you think it sounds exactly like bullets. It can be terrifying. And, again, this is absurd. Now, here's the problem with the Muslim world, and I feel very safe saying that from Tel Aviv, but here's the problem with the Muslim world is that just imagine that I came and I began to swing at you, and I started smacking you in the face over and over again, and then finally you put up one of your arms to block my punch, and when you block my punch, I just scream, assault, 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 look what you did to me, and then the whole world comes to my defense. Well, that's what happened in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. You know, they're attacking the Jewish people, attacking the Jewish people, attacking the Jewish people. And then the police, who have to restore peace and order, come in, and because they hide in the mosque, the criminals, the police have to go in there, and then the Muslim world goes...
All right, the moment, right, you're on sacred territory. The moment you go in there, you have now committed very, very serious sins against Islam, against the faith of Muslims, not just the people there, but the faith of Muslims worldwide. And Mahmoud Abbas, just to jump in,
right.
He claims he's going to have a bombshell at a UN speech. He's decrying dirty Jews and saying that they do not have any right, you know, to come into the mosque.
His exact quote. Al-Aqsa is ours. And by the way, just so you know, so is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So now he wants the
right.
Christian sites too. Jews have no right to desecrate them, meaning to go inside the mosque, with their filthy feet. We will not allow them to do so, and we will do whatever we can to defend Jerusalem. Each drop of blood that was spilled in Jerusalem is pure blood, as long as it's for the sake of Allah, every shaheed, which is a martyr, will be in heaven, and every wounded person will be rewarded by Allah's will. Now, the great part about that, he's not a religious guy. He is a secular guy, just like Arafat. The PLO was not a religious movement, but a secular movement. But they will never let a controversy go unused. There's, you know, so they're using this fake controversy. By the way, if President Obama wants to find fake scandals, he can come here to Israel, because this is a fake scandal. It was started by them. Our police went into the store border not to desecrate Muslim land.
I'll tell you what, I got to jump in. We'll get the update on the rest of what's happened. But, Ron, we come back when... When Jewish holy sites were under Islamic control, how were they treated? We got to let folks know how to connect with Ron Canton when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just another reminder to join me tonight, 7:30 p.m. Valley Stream, 12 East Fairview Avenue. It's Valley Stream, right on the border of Queens and Long Island. So it's in Long Island. We're going to have a very special time teaching Open the Word, then preaching. You'll be inspired. You'll be informed. And I'll be signing copies of my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. I'm joined from Israel with my longtime friend and coworker, Ron Canter. Hey, Ron, just give out your website so folks know how they can connect with you and the great resources you put out every week.
Yeah, our ministry is called messiahsmandate.org. The easiest way to get there is my name, roncanter.com. They can find me on Facebook by searching Messiah's Mandate, and certainly on Twitter at Ron F. Canter. And we'd love to be in touch with everyone. We have a free book called The 15 Most Important Facts That You Need to Know About the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. It can be obtained simply by going to our website, roncanter.com, and just filling out the form there.
All right, and that's, excuse me, C-A-N-T-O-R, Canter.
Correct.
That's it. So Ron, obviously Israel really believes in honoring the holy sites of different religious faiths. They don't just care for ancient Jewish religious sites or famous rabbis' grave sites. They care for the religious sites of Christians and Muslims. They guard that. That is a value that they believe in. And yet, when the Muslim world controlled Jerusalem and some of the holy sites in Israel, things were different. What happened?
Well, it's interesting to note that on June, I believe it was the 7th or 8th, 1967, during the Six-Day War, when Moshe Dayan led the Israeli troops into Jerusalem, one of the first things he did is he publicly said that Israel, he didn't even waste any time. In fact, he didn't even get permission from the prime minister. And some actually think this was a huge mistake. But just to show you the difference, he publicly said that Israel will protect Muslim holy sites. They'd be able to visit. And he wanted to make that very clear right from the beginning. Now, contrast that with 48. In 1948, the Arab Legion, which consisted the Arab armies, came against the new country of Israel, declared war on May 15th, 1948, and their goal was to liquidate Israel, to kill every Jew so there would never be a Jewish state. Somehow, we won that war. Against five Arab nations that were sworn to our destruction. We set up our own country, but we did not have Jerusalem. All the Jews were forced out of the old city of Jerusalem, and it was under Jordanian control. A lot of folks don't know that. There never has been a nation called Palestine, what people call the West Bank today, and they say they want a Palestinian state. They wrongly believe that there once was a Palestinian state. No, when the Arabs had control of it from 1948 to 1967, it was simply a part of Jordan. Now, from 1948 to 1967, Jordan, do you think they did what Moshe Dayan did? They got on a loudspeaker and they said, listen, we know this is hard for you Jewish people that we've taken your old city, but we're going to make sure that you're able to visit. We're going to make sure that you're able to come do bar mitzvahs here, and we're going to protect all of your holy sites.
Mm-hmm.
They did not do that. They destroyed between 68 or 69 synagogues, including, I have a picture on my Facebook page of what was once called the Great Herba Synagogue, the most famous synagogue in Jerusalem, next to the Western Wall, the most holy place in the Old City. They destroyed it. Even after they took it and there was no need to destroy it, they filled it with explosives and just crushed it, brought it to the ground, along with 68 other synagogues. They destroyed and desecrated virtually every Jewish symbol they could. And you know what? There was no one to speak up for us. Now, for the folks in the Muslims there now, they've got Iran, they've got Iraq, they've got Jordan. Jordan, the sweet king of Jordan, who is smart enough. He's a brilliant guy. He knows this is a fake controversy, but he also knows that if he doesn't make a big noise about it, well, he's not a good Muslim. People could turn against him. So in answer to your question, they did nothing to protect Jewish holy sites when they had control. In fact, they sought to destroy them to rid Jerusalem of its Jewishness.
And on a regular basis, if folks are watching state-run Hamas TV in Gaza or state-run Palestinian Authority in so-called West Bank, if they are doing that, they are getting bombarded day and night with anti-Israel propaganda. So you have tension already. You have the fact right. The Israelis are not perfect people and there are going to be abuses here and there. You have the fact that the Palestinians say we're living under occupation and we're not free. And the more tension there is, the more that Israel is going to assert itself. So you have this vicious cycle in that regard. And then it's fueled by this ugly rhetoric that's extreme. I mean, it's not just talking about, you know, let's try to work things out so we can have a homeland and live next to the Jews. It's talking about kill the Jews, exterminate them, and die as a martyr. So this is the rhetoric that you're up against, and this is reality every day in Israel, is it not?
Yeah, and this is our moderate partner for peace, Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian. He's not Hamas. He's not Hezbollah. You know, he's not ISIS. This is our moderate, sweet partner. And he's telling every drop of blood is precious. Go be a martyr. Go, you know, the dirty Jews who come into our mosque. It's crazy. In fact, the other day, you know, I blame him because he's an intelligent guy. He's educated. He's seen the whole world. But imagine the 1.5 billion Muslims, many of whom live in places like Saudi Arabia, Syria, Iraq. They don't know the truth about Israelis. They grew up believing, being taught that we are savages, that we want to drink their blood, literally, that we make matzah on Passover with the blood of Palestinians. They believe this stuff because they have nobody to tell them differently. And a fellow who's escaped Syria, a Muslim guy, gets to Italy, and he's being interviewed by a reporter. And the reporter's asking him, you know, about ISIS. He says, well, the real enemy is still Israel. You know, they want to kill the Palestinians, and they control, they kicked out the Palestinians, they control their homeland. And the guy's talking to him, and he says, now, do you know that I'm Jewish? He's like, you're a Jew? And he said, yeah, I'm Israeli. And he said, and you want to talk to me? Like, and the guy, and the reporter's like, you've been taught this your whole life. And the guy said, I've never met a Jew before. So what we're up against is 1 billion people who believe lies about Israel and the Jewish people, and they've never met an Israeli or a Jew.
Yeah, and so somehow bridges have to be built. How do they get built? How are these ancient prejudices overcome? One of the great things, and Ron, you've seen this firsthand, is Jewish believers and Arab believers coming together as one in Yeshua. Hey, Ron, stay right there. I want to keep talking to you. Messiahsmandate.com. Messiahs, it's M-E-S-S-I-H-S. Messiahs Mandate. Look for that on Facebook, messiahsmandate.com, or Ron Cantor, C-A-N-T-O-R, roncantor.com. He's putting out great material, video, commentary, what's happening. It's engaging. It's informative. Take advantage of it. Friends, do this, and you will not be disappointed. We are basically giving away $10 for an 18-hour series of teaching on prophets and prophetic ministry, featuring some teaching by Leonard Ravenhill as well. You can download. It's only available for download. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Get it there, and I'll see you tonight, Valley Stream.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nations. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. If you've got a Jewish-related question, we'll take some calls in a little while. I head back to Israel with my dear friend, Ron Cantor. Hey, Ron, this is just a short segment here. We've just got about 4.5 minutes. Paint a picture of what Israel is like at this time of the year. These are the high holy days on the biblical calendar. Even non-religious Jews get more religious. What's the atmosphere? You've celebrated the traditional Jewish New Year, the biblical Feast of Trumpets, Yom Teruah, the sounding of the shofar. What's the atmosphere in Israel right now?
It's great. You know, I love living here. I lived in the States most of my life until I was 38. I'm now 50. It's a great culture. It's a very different culture than America, as you know. Very aggressive. People can be very rude to you, particularly if they don't know you, if you cut them off in traffic. But the heart and the character of an Israeli is they will lay down their life for you. You might not feel that if you in small talk, you know, or if you bump into somebody on a train or a bus. But if you're in genuine need, Israelis, they'll take the shirt off their back. And you see it more during the high holidays. It's very similar to the Christmas season in America. People are friendly. Everyone's saying Chag Sameach, happy holidays. It's really great. Now, in our congregation, we're a Messianic congregation. We did a Rosh Hashanah dinner. We had over 70 people. I'd say about 25% at least were visitors. A couple of them were unbelievers. And it was really great. It was wonderful. Our assistant pastor's name is Moti Cohen. He cooked for all 70 people in his little apartment. And
wow,
it was unbelievable. He slept over chicken, steak, fish, salads. It was really an amazing time. But the high holidays in Israel, it's a special time. Obviously, and sadly, that it's a time that other non-religious Jews, they'll become more religious, but it's mostly out of guilt. It's mostly, you know, Judaism, traditional Judaism, I should say, it's a very guilt-based religion that makes you feel horrible if you don't do it. Very similar to Catholicism, and you seek to do as much as you can do to get on God's good side. That's, you know, my philosophy in 3 or 4 words. I'm sure it's much deeper than that. But we'd like to see them come to a real desire to know God through the Messiah, Yeshua.
And are you seeing any open doors, you or your colleagues, with very religious Jews in Israel? Any movement there with them coming to the Messiah in small or large numbers?
Well, it's always happening all over the country, but I would say in small numbers, very small numbers, if you're talking about religious Jews. I had an interesting opportunity about 7 months ago before our last election, where I was contacted by a Knesset member, that's like Congress, and he wanted me to be an activist for their party. And I emailed him back, knowing that it was a form letter, and I said, you know what, before I would even consider becoming an activist, I want to talk to you. And he emailed me back, and he said, let's get together. Now, he's also American-born. He's a Haredi, an ultra-Orthodox Jew, but he's with a secular party. And we spoke for about an hour, and I told him very quick that I was a believer in Yeshua and Jesus, and he was very gracious. Actually, he was a wonderful guy, and we had a really wonderful talk. What I have noticed is that the resistance that I get in America to my faith, I don't find here. Now, people may find it strange. They may not understand, but there's never, at least with me, again, I live in Tel Aviv. I don't live in Jerusalem. Tel Aviv is much more like New York City, whereas Jerusalem is more like Rome, the Vatican. It's very religious. So in Tel Aviv, we don't have near as many ultra-Orthodox Jews as they have in Jerusalem. But I have never, in 12 years, experienced real persecution. It's mostly curiosity.
Got it. All right. From the front lines in Israel, we'll be back with your calls, more with Ron Cantor. And yeah, I want to weigh in on some statements made by Ann Coulter about Israel and the Jews last night. Stay right here.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The mountains shake before him, the demons run and flee. At the mention of your name, King of Majesty, there is no.
That's the voice of Paul Wilbur, with great accompaniment as well. One of our frontline Messianic Jewish leaders in worship and praise and many other areas of ministry. Good friend for years with Ron as well. All right, I'm going to go to the phones shortly, so stay with me. I just want to get a few more minutes with Ron Cantor from Israel before he turns in tonight. Ron, you watched the debate last night. From your vantage point in Israel, we know that the Israelis, by and large, have tremendous distrust for our president, for President Obama, did not feel like he's a real friend of Israel. Obviously, they militantly opposed the Iran deal. But as you watched last night, from your perspective, living in Israel and not being politically ignorant, you know, you're not just sitting there naively, what was your feeling about the debate in terms of Israel? And was there any candidate in particular that you'd say, well, I feel good in terms of Israel with that man or woman being the president of the United States?
Yes, absolutely. I would say the two that come to mind immediately are Ted Cruz, who in the first debate said one of the first things he would do is call up, actually that was Carly Fiorina. Let me go back to Ted Cruz. What he said was that he would move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. We're the only nation in the world that I know of where countries will not put their embassies in our capital, Jerusalem. And yep. Here's Ted Cruz doing the politically incorrect thing. By the way, the Congress has passed it for over 20 years.
Oh, yeah, it's been on the law. Under Clinton, under Bush, we've just never done it. Yeah.
Right, even under the first Bush, I think. Yeah. And nobody's had the political, I'm thinking of a word that I can't say.
Gumption.
Guts. Thank you.
Gumption. Chutzpah.
You say once again, the political chutzpah for Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, to move the embassy and make that powerful statement. Ted Cruz said he would do that. Carly Fiorina said one of the first things she would do on day one was to call it Bibi Netanyahu and say, America is with you, we're back.
Yep.
And I like to hear that. And I also have to say that the two of them, in my opinion, really stood out last night as being bold, articulate defenders. And if I can even go off topic for a minute, the way she answered Mr. Trump for his absurd and childish comments about her looks. And by the way, I think she's actually a very beautiful woman. Yeah, and Trump said so last night, seeking to get back into her good graces.
And listen, Ron, I'll just make sure if Carly Fiorina ends up president or vice president that she will know that Ron Cantor differed with Donald Trump's initial statement and thinks she's beautiful. I'll make sure that she knows. I'll get a personal message to her.
Agreed with his second statement. I just feel bad when anybody says that about somebody. It really hurts me. It makes me angry. But the way she took care of it last night was presidential.
Yeah, she's sharp. She obviously got, I think, impressed the most people last night. And at some point, I may write an open letter just appealing to her to say, look, the passion that you brought to the Planned Parenthood thing, you need to bring to the pro-life cause as a whole, and then you need to bring to other aspects of morality in America. Hey, one other question. Go ahead.
There were two moments that brought me to tears last night. Now, you know me, I'm really super emotional. I cry all the time. But when she made her passionate plea to Hillary Clinton and to Barack Obama to watch the Planned Parenthood video, I was in tears. And then when Ben Carson talked about what his mother went through, married at 13 years old, raising two boys on her own, unbelievable.
All right, so you have the moments that brought Ron Cantor to tears. This is much much richer broadcasting program today than I ever expected, Ron. So last question, and we a lot of what we talked about today we didn't discuss in advance, and some you know we did, and then just open it up for you to talk. But from the perspective of Israel, what do Israelis think of Donald Trump?
I don't know. I can't answer that. I can tell you what this Israeli thinks of him, and I think that he's in fact, if I told you 8 years ago there's this new guy on the scene, at least in terms of politics, he's really sharp, he's articulate, He says what people want to hear. He's going to change things. That's Barack Obama. And what I heard last night is almost no substance. When people ask him, what are you going to say to Putin? Oh, we're going to get along.
Hey, I'm ahead on the polls. I'm leading in the polls. How are you going to treat that? I'm a tough negotiator.
Right. Yeah, I need to hear, if he wants my vote, I need to hear more substance. And I'm hearing that from Ted Cruz.
All right. And then, in terms of Ted Cruz, I think there's a way. He's a brilliant guy. He's a committed believer. I had a great time with his dad on Sunday, and I absolutely believe in his possibilities as presidential material. I mean, I'd love to see him and standing with him in that regard. I'd love to see him in the White House. You know, let's pray. Let's pray for God's best choice and hopefully work together to see that happen. Sometimes when someone's that brilliant, you need to get to know their heart, too. And really feel them as well. And hopefully that will happen as well. And, you know, there's some fine candidates running with some real potential.
Listen, if you ever get the opportunity to meet Ted Cruz, to interview him, would you tell him that I also think he's quite beautiful?
I will. I don't know if I'll tell him that part, Ron. but hopefully I will get to meet him. Did you hear the end? I know I said last question, but did you see the Ann Coulter tweets?
I did. I was stunned, and then I thought, well, you know, that's about right. She's a sensationalist. She's brilliant. She's articulate. She's funny. And but she will do things to get attention, and that was way over the line.
Pandering. They're all pandering to Israel and these blanking Jews and how many of them are in America and so on. And, okay, she presents herself as a Christian. Why the profanity? And then trying to win over evangelicals by standing with Israel. Is there nothing more to it? The thing that's scary is you see the responses and all the people retweeting and favoriting. I think that if she started to speak in an anti-Jewish, anti-Israel way, that the whole lot of people would come out of the woodwork. That's what would scare me. I'm not saying she's going to do that. She may be a friend of Israel in other ways. I don't know if she has a history of anti-Jewish statements. I mean, this was kind of new in that respect. But what wouldn't surprise me, I think there's always something festering under the surface. I'm not paranoid, but I think it doesn't
much. We, as Jews, we're kind of sheltered. We know what happens in Israel. We know that we don't have horns. At least I checked this morning. I still didn't. We forget sometimes that so many people in America grew up with grandparents speaking about those dirty Jews and how horrible. And there are a lot of people who probably still harbor a lot of those opinions. They wouldn't say it out loud today like they would 50 years ago. But every now and then I kind of wake myself up and say, Ron, do you realize that there's a whole lot of people out there that hate you just because you're Jewish?
Yeah, there is a reality. There's a spiritual reality. Anti-Semitism is the default attitude of the human race. That's what I believe. It's just a human sinful tendency and a demonic thing. And I may be writing about that tonight, Ann Coulter and the Jews. We'll see. Hey, listen, Ron, get some sleep. May the rest of your holiday season be blessed. Go to roncantor.com, C-A-N-T-O-R. Get the free book about Israel and the land of Israel and sign up to get his weekly video commentary as well. Great talking to you, Ron. Give my love to Alana.
Bless you, and tell Nancy I said hello.
I'll do it. All right. Ron Cantor from Israel. Again, that's roncantor.com. 866-34-TRUTH. Thank you for being so patient. Let me go to the phones in Sussex County, New Jersey. Doug, welcome to the Line of Fire. Doug, you're not there anymore. Well, I thank you for being patient. I guess I was too soon there. We go to Waco, Texas. Kenneth, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Again, thank you for taking my call. I had a question about Jeremiah 49. I know you have a commentary on Jeremiah, I believe. So I heard Hormoz Chariot of Iran Alive Ministries, who I really respect him and his work, and he had said that he believes that Elam in Jeremiah 49 refers to Iran, and that the God establishing his throne predicts them becoming a Christian nation. And I don't hear that said a lot, and I think about other prophecies like in Ezekiel that people interpret as, if it were to happen today, it would be present-day Iran attacking Israel, and I just don't see a Christian nation obviously doing that. I'm just wondering if you have ever thought about these issues and how to just reconcile everything here?
Yeah, sure thing. And just get the exact verse that you're speaking about. In the book of Ezekiel, beginning in the 46th chapter, for the next five chapters, that is the oracles against the nations. So these are the prophecies that Ezekiel delivered against the foreign nations, and some of them there's just judgment, and then that's it. There's judgment, and there's nothing else. In other cases, there's judgment, and then God says there's going to be restoration. So the question is, what does that mean? Or God restores the captivity? Does that mean He's going to give them another chance? Does that mean He's just going to raise them up as a nation again in the future? Some had the strange idea that in the millennial kingdom, and I'm just saying this for the benefit of our listeners in general, some had the strange idea that the millennial kingdom, they get a second chance at salvation, which is obviously an unbiblical concept. Or I tell you what, we'll look at the exact verse. Is there a prophecy? Is there a prophecy about Iran coming to faith in Jesus? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so just looking in Jeremiah, the 49th chapter, to answer Kenneth's question, there are references to Elam, and I just grabbed the actual verses there. So in verse 34 of Jeremiah 49, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning Elam. In the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, thus says the Lord of hosts, behold, I'll break the bow of Elam, the mainstay of their might, and I'll bring upon Elam the four winds from the four quarters of heaven, and I'll scatter them to all those winds, and there shall be no nation to which those driven out of Elam shall not come. I will terrify Elam before their enemies and before those who seek their life. I'll bring disaster upon them. My fierce anger declares the Lord. I'll send the sword after them till I've consumed them. And I will set my throne in Elam and destroy their king and officials, declares the Lord. But in the latter days, I will restore the fortunes of Elam, declares the Lord. So, Ken, what I wrote about that in my Jeremiah commentary, I explained some of the background there. Elam, located east of the Tigris, modern-day Iran. Its capital was Susa or Shushan. It was defeated by the Assyrian king Ashurbanipal in 646-645 BC, who showed great animosity to the king of Elam. Ancient historical records confirmed by Isaiah 21 and 22 indicate that Elam, famous for its archers, joined with Assyria in its attacks on Judah and Jerusalem, causing great suffering. Then it says this terrible judgment will come, but then it says at the end of this, God will restore the fortunes, or in the latter days. It simply could mean that national heritage will one day be restored. It does not say that Iran will be saved. And Iran as a whole was a different nation. So there's location here with ancient Elam, but it doesn't answer completely to modern day Iran. So to say that this is a prophecy that Iran will be saved in the future, I'd say is really stretching it beyond the text.
All right, thank you. Well, that's very helpful. I do know that there's some evidence of that it is the fastest growing Christian part of the Middle East. So just ask people
pray for the church. God is moving in amazing ways. The restoring the fortunes is more of a restoration of a nation that was destroyed, that it will be resuscitated. It doesn't specifically speak of spiritual salvation, but let it be. I mean, if there's any hint of that, let it be, because God is moving in amazing ways for sure. Thank you, sir,
Amen.
For the call. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. We've reconnected with Doug in Sussex County, New Jersey. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire. Doug, you there?
Hello?
Yes, go
Hello?
Ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I had a question about the Sunni and the Shiite.
Yep.
Well, they're divided over the Shiite believe that Muhammad's son-in-law should be the leader of the caliphate, and the Sunnis believe it should be, I guess, the strongest or whoever. And then there was the Muhammad's prophecy that Islam would be divided and that one would win. So it pits them against each other. So my thought was that Iran, if it gets the nuclear bomb, its biggest concern is going to be Sunnis, and I was wondering if you thought that that's related to the book of Daniel, to the king of the north being Iran and
Yeah, I mean, I don't read it like that. I appreciate the thought behind it. I don't personally read it like that, but I don't claim to have all of the Book of Daniel clearly worked out. What is clear is that the Sunni world, Saudi Arabia being at the head of that, is very concerned about Iran getting a nuclear bomb. Very concerned about that for sure. The Sunni world knows that Iran is their enemy as well. Let's look, for example, in Syria right now. The civil war in Syria is being fueled by Iran and by Saudi Arabia. Now, not only by them. We know Russia's involved and other countries are involved in whatever we're doing covertly or overtly. But it's being fueled by Iran and Saudi Arabia, especially. The Iranians are backing the Shiites, and the Saudis are backing the Sunnis, and they're slaughtering each other. Muslims slaughtering Muslims, blowing each other up, and you have it in Iraq, the war between Shiite and Sunni there. So for Iran to have a nuclear weapon, Saudi Arabia is now saying, okay, what about ours? What about ours? They don't trust the Iranians. There's also an end-time mentality, Doug, in Shiite circles. There's more of an eschatological emphasis. I'm going to give a ridiculously broad comparison, but pre-trib rapture Christians have much more of a consciousness of the return of Jesus, and they talk about it more, and it's any moment kind of thing. It can have some mistakes with it, but there's a lot of talk and excitement about the return of Jesus. Well, Shiite Muslims may have more of an eschatological mentality, the 12th imam or the, you know, this hidden Islamic leader and what's going to happen. And ISIS, apparently, if the studies that are circulating are accurate, that ISIS apparently has this mentality that they have to fight the final war and then lose. And that's going to bring in the great Islamic redemption. So all that to say, if you are leading a country with these fanatical beliefs, and on top of that, you have a nuclear bomb, your neighbors that are Israel and your neighbors that are Saudi Arabian countries like that, they are obviously going to be very, very much concerned with those things. But to work it out with the Book of Daniel, I don't personally see it like that, Doug. But will Sunnis and Shiites be in an all-out war, massive war, nuclear war? It could happen. Look, thank you, Doug, for the call. The war between Iran and Iraq was fashioned as a holy war by both sides, even though the Iranians were more religious than the Iraqis, and even though there is still a majority of Shiites in both countries, that was still looked at as a holy war of sorts. So this could get very bloody, very ugly. Look, we are constantly conscious about the needs of Christians in the Middle East. We are very cognizant of the terrible suffering going on. We absolutely want to see intervention on behalf of the believers. We know the atrocities they're experiencing. Whatever we can do as a church to stand together, we need to. At the same time, remember that the largest numbers of casualties are Muslims killing Muslims. That's probably ongoing the largest number of casualties. The Christians may be suffering in the worst way because they're the persecuted minority, and they're not able to fight back the same way. They don't have the same military backing and things like that. And again, they are the despised ones. However, let's just remember that Muslims are slaughtering Muslims. We need to be praying for them. When I think about radical Islam, I don't just think about the murderous acts. I think about human beings that are passionately giving themselves to a wrong cause. And the shocking numbers of converts now in the West who think, yeah, this is it. I'm giving myself to it. I was looking for absolutes. This is it. It's scary stuff, but it is going on. And that's why we need to be praying for the Muslim world, for the opening of eyes, because the harvest of Muslims coming to faith is like never before in world history. All right, friends, let me encourage you to visit the website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on our special offer. It's wonderful, it's edifying, and we're practically giving it away. My bottom line today, when you pray for the peace of Jerusalem, pray also for the hand of God to work in the Muslim world for the salvation of millions of Muslims and Jewish people as well. It is time to focus our attention on Israel.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you, coming away live from Long Island, Valley Stream, Long Island, right on the border of Queens. So if you happen to be listening to me from there, by all means, join us tonight. But probably you're not in New York listening right now, our great New York station. That was the last hour. So I've got an invitation. Are you ready? I've got an invitation. This coming Sunday night, please jot it down. We've got great stations all over North Carolina. Friends in Winston-Salem and Raleigh and Blanketing, Charlotte. Please, if you live anywhere in the greater Charlotte area, this is going to be an impactful night you don't want to miss. Sunday night, 6 to 8 p.m. in Kannapolis. That's a little bit north of Charlotte. Refuge Church, Pastor Jay Stewart. He's got a great banner, a great big banner in front of his, right on the church building, which is on a major road, Kannapolis Highway, I think. Can you be gay and Christian? We will address issues that are controversial with great care, with great love, with great precision, compassion and truth, grace and truth coming together. 6 to 8 p.m., and we'll have an extensive period for live questions. If you disagree with me, if you believe I'm wrong on these issues, the mics will be open. If you need clarity, if you're struggling with these issues, if you have a friend or family member that is, if you need biblical clarity, the mics will be open after my talk. For more info, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on itinerary. You'll be able to find out more about the meeting. That's Sunday night, this coming Sunday, September 20th. Love to see you there. If it's a two-hour drive, I don't want to impose it on you, but I think it'll be worth it. And also, I'll be signing copies of my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. We'll also have copies of Can You Be Gay and Christian? So mark this down if you're in the greater Charlotte area this coming Sunday night. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I've got a question for you, my listeners, 866-34-TRUTH. As you listened to the debate last night, do you feel the candidates talked about Israel too much? Were you heartened to hear how they spoke about Israel? And if you had to look to any one candidate that would do the right thing regarding Israel, is there any one or are there several? Or are there any that you would not trust in terms of their solidarity with Israel? 866-34-TRUTH. Some news items here. According to Breitbart.com, U.S. has taken in 24 times more migrants than Pope's home country of Argentina. This is news because people are wondering if the Pope will make an appeal to America to take in more refugees. And this is just a point that if he does focus on immigration, that America has taken in many migrants over these years. Can America be criticized of that? Are we doing more than enough? Here's the other question. If it's a matter of taking in legitimate refugees from Syria. I'm looking at a call from Sweden. Sorry about that. Gabby, I want to get to you next. If it's a question of taking legitimate refugees, not radical Islamists, not militant Muslims, but legitimate refugees who don't have an agenda and who need a new place to live and are gladly willing to fit in with our country, that's one thing. If it's a matter of bringing radicals into our country that want to work against our ideals and ultimately destroy us, you don't open the door. You don't open the door.
Oh God of burning, cleansing flame. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, if you've got any Jewish-related question for me today, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, Hebrew Bible-related, and keep taking questions on the Book of Job, especially specific words as I'm translating the Book of Job right now to enhance my commentary that's completed. By all means, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH, Israel-related. If you watched the debate and you had a comment that was just in terms of the debaters and where they stand on Israel, by all means, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Sundsvall, Sweden. Gabby, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi.
Hello, thank you for calling all the way from Sweden.
Yeah, man, I'm from Sweden. I'm Christian, and I am actually from Syrian. And I live in Sweden now in 15 years. I don't understand what happened now in all Europe, what they do, because my father, my people lived in Turkey, and you know all the history about the Muslim who killed the Armenian people and the Aramaic Syrian people who was a Christian. My father.
Yes, absolutely lived, terrible history, genocide, a Muslim genocide of Christians in Armenia.
Yes.
And yeah, terrible history.
My father lived that area and came to Syria to live in peace. And now I live Syria and came to Europe in the same way because I want to live in peace. And now they came here to Europe, and all Europe opened the arms, and the right be wrong, and the wrong be right. They don't understand that we have actually 1,400 years we live with these people. Then Muhammad came to that area. They don't know how much thousands of church was there in that area.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that the big mosque in Damascus was a church. And
yes.
Like
so Gabby, yeah, just so our listeners understand, you're saying that Christians have lived together and non-Christians have lived together fairly peacefully for a good period of time. You've had your terrible world wars and things like that, but those primarily were not religiously based. But that as Muslim refugees have come to France, have come to Sweden, have come to Holland, have come to other countries, have come to Germany, that they've come with a radical mentality. They've come with a mentality that is not accepting of European ways.
Yes, and the same mentality that they have with my people than 1,400 years. We were few millions Christian there. Now we aren't. Now we lose. We are in the old country of the world. We were few million. Now I don't think maybe we are few hundred thousand. And no Christian can live now in Syria. You know that. And it's nothing new. That happened in the history then Muhammad came. So it's nothing new. And they don't understand that the Muslim who, the European, cannot understand that the Islam has the radical idea that they cannot live with another idea. They cannot accept you like Christian or Buddhist or anything.
Right. So in other words, you have moderate Muslims who are not that religious, but they don't really speak for the Muslim world because they're not that religious. They're not praying five times a day. They don't believe in the Quran on the same level. They don't follow all of the traditions the same way. So they're more moderate. They're not as serious about the faith, but the ones who are serious about the faith, they believe that the Western world is full of corruption, full of sexual immorality, full of materialism, and worshiping false gods, worshiping a trinity and things like that, and that they have the truth. Now, of course, there is a lot of corruption and carnality in the Western world. That's shameful. So say Muslims look at a country like America, and America sends out all these movies around the world, and the movies are full of sex and violence, and the Muslim world says, that's terrible. Look at this. A country like Sweden, the sensual women and all these pictures, that's terrible, and Muslims hate that. And I understand where they're coming from in terms of their moral issues, but they basically feel that what they have to do is take over, that Islam is devoted not just to sharing a faith, but through making converts and then enforcing that faith through Sharia law. And the West wants to be so tolerant and accepting. You can care about human beings, but the West needs to open its eyes. The West needs to understand that there are people coming in their countries who do not want to accept German ways and Swedish ways and Dutch ways. They want aggressively to turn those countries towards Islam, but not just that in a way of sharing the faith, also aggressively and violently. Go ahead.
Yeah, that is the idea, and that is all. Did you see in the TV? You see that they all men. They leave the woman, their family in the places in Turkey or some places, but the men just come here. And that's what I said about 1,400 years, that we had showed them the love. We was actually very peaceful with them and open our house. And what we take back, they take our houses, they take our church, in the history. So that's what they will do in Europe. And Europe didn't understand that, because they didn't learn or read the Quran. They don't.
Yeah, but look, when you have someone, Gabby, like Geert Wilders in Holland, a right-wing politician, conservative politician, who is warning people about the radical, or I should say the violent interpretation of the Quran, and saying that there are many Muslims, several hundred million Muslims around the world, who believe in these verses of violence for today. People hate him, and he can't make his way into England. He's barred from England. And, it's almost like this picture I once saw of these Muslim radicals shouting, "How dare you call us terrorists?
Yes.
We'll kill you." Well, you're just saying you're doing that very thing. So let me ask you one last question. We've got a break, but thank you for calling in. And this is an alarm that we're sounding as well, sir. The Muslim world says, well, you infiltrate our countries. You bomb us in Iraq. You come into this country. You come into that country. You defile our holy places. You are the guilty ones. We're just trying to live in peace. What would you say to that?
I don't understand the question. Can you take it with a simple, because I'm not good in English very well.
If the Muslims feel that we have invaded their countries, the Muslims feel that we are the bad ones, that we have gone to war in their countries, and therefore they are the victims. They are the good guys. Yeah. We are the bad guys. What do you say to that?
You know, I said, like, I'm sorry for this answer, because if the problem is the European who invade them, why they kill each other in their country? Why the Muslims kill each other in Libya? Why the Muslims kill each other in Yemen? Why the Muslims kill each other in Saudi Arabia and Yemen? Why the Muslims kill each other in Syria and Iraq? That is the problem. Is the
yeah. And just to jump in, we are on Christian radio here. Hopefully that was bleeped out successfully twice. The fact is, it doesn't answer the question that you raise: why in Libya? Why in Yemen? Why in Iraq? Why in Egypt? Why in other countries are Muslims killing Muslims and the mass atrocities taking place in Syria? If it's just a matter of infiltration, if it's just a matter of, you know, the Western world has invaded the Muslim world, and we've gotten them upset, and that's where they're upset with us. Why then the atrocities being committed, Muslim against Muslim? We need to pray for the Muslims to find Jesus. We need to pray for God to work and open up hearts and minds. There are many that are sincere, but are sincerely deceived. And yes, Europe, America, wake up. Just because your next door neighbor is a really, really sweet Muslim, and maybe he is or she is, doesn't mean that Islamic radicals do not have radical goals and their violent goals, and they're here in America. How do we deal with that effectively without hurting those who are not radicals and not violent? Thank you, sir, for the call.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, so my apologies there for a couple of words that slipped through from our dear caller from Sweden, who was making some very important points. Because his accent was a little hard to understand, by the time he had said something, it had slipped past our window of a few seconds to bleep it out. But there will be nothing bleepable on the final broadcast that we put online, so you'll be able to listen to it without those couple of minor little interruptions. 866-34-TRUTH. Going to go back to the phones in a moment. Check out my latest article. I felt prompted to write it yesterday. It's very different than most of what I've written. It's called Be a Better Hater of Evil. And I talk about how it's not just a matter of loving good, but also hating evil. How important it is to hate evil, to hate injustice, to be moved to do the right thing because of that. So just check out my latest articles, askdrbrown.org. Here is a report on Fox News. Hamas hatred, new documentary shows Iranian-backed terror group indoctrinating kids. It's by Paul Auster, published just a few days ago, September 11th. And this is from Haifa. A new documentary grimly predicts the role Iran plays in financing terror organizations and the indoctrination of children at military summer camps in the Middle East will significantly increase as a result of the imminent release of huge sums of money to Tehran under the nuclear agreement endorsed by the Obama administration. Let me just grab a clip or two before I go back to the phones. Let's see here. Okay, we played this earlier. Let me go back to this. Clip number 10, Joey. I just want to play this again. Excuse me, Senator Ted Cruz making one of the stronger statements about Israel last night. Others made some very strong statements as well. And then these bizarre comments from Ann Coulter. This is just pandering, you know, trying to get evangelical voters. Or why are you pandering to the blanking Jews? And I'm really thinking of writing an article addressing that tonight. I'm not shocked by the comments because she said other things over the years that were shocking, and then many points that I thought were good points. But in any case, let's hear what Senator Ted Cruz had to say. I don't doubt him for a minute because from what I know of him, he has been independent, meaning he doesn't bow down to the establishment. He may be called an outcast, but he's going to stand for what he believes is right. And he stands firmly and militantly against this deal with Iran. Here's what he said.
This deal on its face will send over $100 billion to the Ayatollah Khamenei, making the Obama administration the world's leading financier of radical Islamic terrorism. This deal abandons four American hostages in Iran, and this deal will only accelerate Iran's acquiring nuclear weapons. You better believe it. If I am elected president on the very first day in office, I will rip to shreds this catastrophic Iranian nuclear deal.
I believe he'd do everything in his power to make that happen. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, I just want to introduce this caller. There is ultra-Orthodox Jewish man from Baltimore, Maryland, named Mendel. We militantly and passionately disagree about who Jesus is. I'm 100% sure that he is our Messiah and Savior, and Mendel vehemently differs with that. He believes that the deceased rabbi, the leader of the Lubavitch Hasidic movement, who died in 1994, is actually the Messiah and will soon be revealed, and he would claim that he's not really dead at all. So Mendel and I fundamentally disagree. He calls in every so often, and we have some chats, sometimes more passionate than others. But I just want you to know, as he comes on, that that's a little bit of the background. And Mendel, before we get to the point you wanted to raise, and it may be related, you called a few weeks back, and we actually took that clip, the audio of it, and put it on YouTube. You made very clear that before the end of this month of September, that the Messiah, and obviously you mean Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the Rebbe, would be revealed, that he would clearly be revealed before the end of this month. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That actually happened in 1991 with the Gulf War. The Rebbe said that it was a fulfillment of what it says in the Yalkut Shmoni, that when you see Paras, the caller was asking about Elam, Paras refers to the empire of Iran. In those days, it included Iraq. So when that happens, there's a war between Paras and then Melech Arvi, Kuwait at the time, and Aram, the United States. That will mean that the Messiah is revealed. People will be so afraid, including the Jewish people, of what they should do and where they should go, that Mashiach will tell them, in Hebrew we say, B'ni al tisrael, my son, don't be afraid. Kol Masha Sisi, everything that I've done, Lo Sisi, I didn't do, Ela b'shvilchem, except for your sake. Hagiyaz man galaskem, the time of your redemption has arrived. And the Rebbe said that means that Mashiach is revealed. So what we're waiting for now, an answer to your question, is about that particular date, was the re-revelation of Mashiach, because we have in Jewish tradition, it's the second to last Rashi in the Sefer Daniel, in the book of Daniel. It talks about how, Daniel talks about how, the Messiah will be first revealed, then he'll be concealed, and then he'll be revealed again. And Rashi comments, fortunate are those who await him. Isn't everybody fortunate who awaits him? Of course. But once he's revealed and then he's concealed, fortunate are those who await him for his re-revelation.
All right, so what exactly is going to happen before the end of this month for the whole world to know that the man that you believe in is the Messiah, who I say may have been a great leader, was absolutely not the Messiah, certainly not the man you believe is the Messiah? What is going to happen for the world to actually know before the end of this month that, in your view, he really was the Messiah?
Okay, the Rebbe said in 1980, and Rabbi Kanievsky, if the listeners want to do a Google search, put in Kanievsky Messiah Imminent, and they'll find an article called Breaking Israeli News, and they'll see him say that he's coming at the end of the Shemitah period. The language he uses is at the end of Shvius. The Shvius is the seven-year period of Shemitah. He says he was coming then, and so we're in that time frame. It doesn't mean particularly on the date of September the 12th. He said that is referring to the end of the Shemitah period, but he's going to come in this time frame.
So what does it mean when you say he's going to come? What does that mean? Real simple terms. What does it mean when in your view, that the man you believe is the Messiah is going to, quote, come? What does that actually mean?
There's different stages in it, of course, spiritually, without getting into the Maimonides, who talks about the various ways we know who the Messiah is. And that is that first he comes in a way of revelation, and that's why the Rebbe said that he's revealed now at the time of 1991. And then there's a period where he actually has come.
Tell you what. I got one more segment. I got a few more segments, but I want to give you one more segment to explain, because when it doesn't happen, I want you to call me back, and then I can help you find the real Messiah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The single biggest national security threat facing America right now is the threat of a nuclear Iran. We've seen 6.5 years of President Obama leading from behind. Weakness is provocative, and this Iranian nuclear deal is nothing short of catastrophic.
Again, Senator Ted Cruz from the debate last night, the one getting the most attention, Carly Fiorina, delivered some great points with great passion and clarity of thought, obviously. Want to know more about her views in depth and really understand what makes her tick, but obviously very impressive in that regard. And boy, I'll tell you, although there are certain people I have questions about and certain ones that would not get my vote, I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or any Democrat candidate who endorsed the Democratic platform, then obviously I could not possibly vote for them. And they're not going to have, barring divine intervention, a Democratic candidate who renounces the party platform and gets in. Even though they haven't made the platform, we know where it's going. It's going to be pro-abortion, it's going to be pro-same-sex marriage, and probably going to be weak on Israel again. So no matter what, they can't get my vote. But whether I vote for the Republican candidate would be how true blue they are to these values and willing to live them out. But glad to see so many standing strongly with Israel. This is Michael Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. If you've got any Jewish-related questions for me, this is the number to call. So, Mendel, you understand, I believe, that your views are deeply deceived and that soon enough that'll become real to you. I'm really hoping it will be sooner rather than later. But you believe these things fervently, and I'm giving you airtime on my show. So explain exactly what will happen in a tangible, undeniable way that you believe the Rebbe will make himself known as the Messiah, not just people thinking it or having a feeling or reading his teachings, but you say he's actually going to come. I can tell you exactly what I mean about Jesus coming, Jesus returning. What's going to happen according to your views?
Well, what's going to happen is that some of the final things have to be concluded. One of those is that he's going to fight the wars of God. And there's a difference of opinion on whether that means only spiritual wars or also physical wars. As far as the spiritual wars are concerned, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, par excellence, has fought those wars, and those include the assimilation of the Jewish people to be like the nations. And he has brought back tremendous numbers of Jews to their roots in doing so. So what we're looking for now, and the reason I called up, was to talk about this fear that people have about the war with Iran. If people will look at Psalms 2 and 3, they'll get an inkling of how this is not going to be anything that's going to hurt the Jewish people in Jerusalem, because even in Yechezkel and Ezekiel, it talks about this war of Gog and Magog being around Jerusalem, but not in Jerusalem. So what we see in the Psalms is that the Jewish people will be completely immune against any of the war's repercussions, as those who decry the Jewish lives will be at stake. The psalmist says, why are they their concerns are for nothing. That's in Psalm 2:1. The nations will be in turmoil. When you decry the fact that these nations around Israel are fighting one with the other, it's actually a good thing, because while they're fighting with each other,
but you still haven't told me though. I know you want to get this message out. You still haven't told me what is going to happen. So you're saying that Lubavitcher Rebbe at some point is going to physically fight the wars of the Lord.
Because he's become concealed. He was once revealed, and that was all the way through the period of 1951 when he took over the leadership until 1994 when he became concealed. So the term we use for that is Nixa. Nixa, you
right,
know
so, so he's hid, he's according to you, he's hidden now, so mm-hmm. everybody thinks he's dead. So mm-hmm. when he's revealed then, according to you, the whole world will know that he's alive? They'll see him?
In the flesh.
All right. Hey, gotta go. You heard it there. Everyone's gonna see him in the flesh. If it happens, it's a satanic deception, but it ain't gonna happen. So don't sweat it. All right. You heard it. Let's pray for Mendel. Thank you, sir, for calling.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, to be clear, I'm not saying that God won't frustrate the purposes of Iran. I'm not saying that God doesn't have surprises in store, just like he did in the book of Esther with ancient Iran, Persia. I don't know. I know this. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I know this. Iran is funding terror in the Middle East, and some of that terror has taken American lives. That I know. That I know. And it's taken the lives of Iraqis and Syrians and probably Yemenites and maybe others as well, Muslims in the Middle East. So we are talking about a financier of terror, and Iran has not backed away from their pronouncements against Israel. Iran has not backed away from its support of radical terrorism. And because of that, if we are going to infuse them with tens of billions of dollars, if we're going to do that, how in the world can we do that without thinking that, well, it's not just going to go for humanitarian aid in Iraq and rebuilding of the economy and things like that because of the sanctions? No, it's not going to go at all to terror. How are we going to think that? Of course it's going to also go to terror. What does Hamas do with the money that comes pouring in? The people of Gaza could be living super well with all the aid for, quote, Palestinian refugees if the money was rightly directed. But it is used for terror, not only, but largely. Building terror tunnels instead of, you look at the bombs dropping and the damage from the war with Gaza, and you see what the Israeli military did in response to Hamas terrorism. You see all that, right? How come the hospitals aren't being rebuilt on a faster level? How come the schools aren't being rebuilt at a faster level? How come apartment buildings are? Because money's pouring in there. It's being used to build terror tunnels to infiltrate Israel and kill and destroy, and for weapons buildup. That's why. And it is the Muslim people who are suffering the most at the hands of their radical leaders. And sadly, there's sufficient deception that many of them follow along. Okay, I gave an explanation earlier this week, and as I gave it, I knew I was giving it in a slightly fuzzy way. And that's one reason that I said that this is this is part of the explanation. But I actually got an email sent in. Where is this here? And I so appreciate a listener calling in to say that I explained something incorrectly. So thank you so much for that. So this is the deal. I explained the reason for the two-day celebration of Rosh Hashanah, even though the biblical calendar, it's the first day of the seventh month, it's just one day, and then it became the Jewish New Year. But aside from that, it's just one day. How did it get celebrated? 2 days. And I said because of the ambiguity of when the new moon is sighted and then getting the word out so that the rest of the world would know it. And as I was saying it, I said it in an imprecise way. The correct explanation is that it was for witnesses to say they had seen the new moon. If there was any delay in that, that there would therefore be a second day. Here's the way it's explained on Orthodox Jewish website. In fact, the very group that our last caller is affiliated with, and I'll share this quickly, then go back to the phones. According to the Talmud, the two-day celebration of Rosh Hashanah is an enactment of the early prophets who established it for the following reason. Now, to put it all the way back to the early prophets, I'd say is far-fetched. There's no evidence for it except for rabbinic tradition. But here's the explanation from the ancient world. During the period of the prophets, the sanctification of the months was dependent upon hearing the testimony of witnesses who had seen the new moon. On the evening following the 29th day of Elul, the court would sanctify the day as the first of Tishrei, so the first day of the seventh month, based on the possibility that witnesses might come that day and testify that they had seen the new moon, retroactively establishing Rosh Hashanah on that day. If the witnesses did indeed appear, then that day would be sanctified, and the following day, it would be a regular day, the second of Tishrei. However, if witnesses did not appear, then the following day would be Rosh Hashanah, and retroactively, the previous evening, which the court had sanctified, would turn out to be a regular weekday, so that people would not treat the first day lightly, since it sanctified or weekday status was dependent upon the appearance of witnesses during the course of the day. The early prophets ordained that Rosh Hashanah be celebrated as a two-day holiday, with the prohibition of work, the sounding of the shofar, and the order of prayer being observed on both days. I would thank the listener by name, except I can't find the email. But thank you, sir, for writing and reminding me that my explanation was not precise and helping us to get it more precise right here. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. William, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me on the program. I just want to encourage all your listeners who say that they're followers of Jesus to get into their Bibles and read the Gospels and see what Jesus said. He told us to be light and salt. And so in order to be light and salt, no matter what country we're in, we're to do that which is right and just according to God's word, not according to our feeling or to the culture. We are to preserve and to be, as it says in Old and New Testament, be holy even as the Lord your God is holy, and to be children who love their parents. So if God is our Father, we need to emulate him, and we need to allow his Spirit to work in us and to change us so that this world has hope, because without Yeshua, there is no hope. And I appreciate your show, and I'm totally against that Iran deal, and I'm totally flabbergasted, except to go back to the words of Jesus, which makes sense. He said, when they say that which is right is wrong, and that which is wrong is right, the end is near.
Yeah, well, listen, let me say this. First, William, you're absolutely right. We need to get back to the scriptures on all levels, on all levels. And that's what brings us sobriety. That's what brings us clarity. That's what brings us God's heart. The word of God, Hebrews 4:12, separates between soul and spirit. I taught on that this morning on Long Island for a couple hundred pastors, leaders, and believers, going through the scriptures, and we deal with many emotional issues, difficult issues in terms of your emotions want to go one way, and your mind wants to go another way, and what's right, what's wrong, and you're wrestling with it. The Word of God separates, and the Word of God brings clarity, and oh, I see, got it, all clear, I know what to believe. And it wasn't Jesus who specifically said, when you see people calling right wrong and wrong right, you know the end is near. But those sentiments that are through Scripture, recognizing the world being messed up. So I'm not looking for a presidential candidate to come into office and say, I'm requiring everyone in America to read the Bible today. And if you stop going to church, you're going to be penalized. And if you leave the Christian faith, you're going to be put to death. No, God forbid. No. But I am looking for a leader to really know the Lord and be informed by the word, because I believe God's ways are ways of life, and God's ways are ways of truth, and God's ways are ways of freedom. And if we follow him, we will be blessed. We may have hard times in this world, excuse me, but we will ultimately be blessed. William, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, Matt, I just spotted the email a moment ago as well. David Rodstein. So, David, thank you for taking time to call in and to make sure that we clarified things. And thank you for your support and your prayer. So, right, it's the reverse of what I said. It's not a matter of getting the word out to the rest of the world. It's a matter of getting the word into Jerusalem and for the official confirmation. Hence 2 days instead of one. But anyway, thanks. And I'm just glancing at the detailed email that you sent. Much appreciated. Yeah, David, all the way over from Jerusalem. Thank you, sir, for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Have you ever heard Ann Coulter say stuff that would sound anti-Israel in the past? You know, her tweets have disturbed a lot of people and rallied a lot of others. Obviously, she's always controversial. And there are many things she says that I appreciate and agree with, and many others I would never say the way she does, and many other things that grieve me that she would say. But the statements about the Jews, about Israel last night, were a surprise. If she said these kinds of things I'm not aware of them. I don't know what her history is on these things. I don't know of her ever being considered a critic of Israel. But the idea that the candidates were all pandering to Israel during the debate, and by pandering to Israel and saying, look, we're strongly pro-life, we're strongly pro-Israel, that this is how they're going to get evangelical voters. Let me say this. When Carly Fiorina said what she said about Planned Parenthood in those videos, she wasn't pandering to anybody. You don't speak like that, in my view. You don't speak like that with that level of passion and conviction if you're pandering. I hope she can grab hold of that on an even wider level with all of the pro-life movement and not just the exposing of Planned Parenthood. When Ted Cruz says what he says, there's no question to me that he passionately believes these things. He's not pandering, trying to win over a vote on that point. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
هذا الأقصى لنا والقيامة لنا كلها لنا لا يعني حق لهم أن يدنسوها بأقدامهم القذرة.
The voice of Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas declaring that these dirty Jews will never desecrate the holy place, meaning the sacred mosques and the Temple Mount, as Israel had to put down violence and potential violent assaults and enter into one of the mosques. This drew the comments from Abbas. And again, as my friend Ron Cantor on earlier in the broadcast pointed out, Abbas is considered to be the moderate compared to Hamas. Let's see. Oh, a couple of other things. Here we go. Yeah, covered that already. Do I want to cover this? Yeah, where'd this come from? Where in the world did this one come from? Iceland. Iceland's capital, Reykjavik, that's it. How is this hard? Everybody knows the name of Iceland's capital, Reykjavik. I don't get it, right? Has passed a resolution boycotting Israeli-made goods in protest of Israel's racist apartheid policy towards the Palestinians. Their quote, their words, racist apartheid policy. The city council of Icelandic capital, Reykjavik, just keep going, has passed a resolution banning all Israeli-made products in protest of policy in the Palestinian territories. The resolution was proposed by Councilwoman, you got to be kidding me. How do you, right, tell you what, Joey, I'm going to copy this for you. And you, the first name maybe is Bjork. Maybe that's not that hard to pronounce. But I'm just going to copy this and paste this for you, Joey. And you're going to tell me how to pronounce this. I can't get it here. I'm going to spell it. I'll spell it for all of our listeners. V-I-L-H-E-L-M. So Wilhelms S-D-O with a little cap on it. T-T-I. Wilhelms Dieter. That wasn't that bad. The resolution was proposed by Councilwoman Bjork Wilhelmsdottir, who mentioned that she intends to spend the rest of the year doing humanitarian work in the Palestinian territories. Do the work, but don't incite hatred against Israel. The resolution appears to be purely symbolic since it didn't mention specific companies or products, and it's not clear if the city municipal authorities have even had business ties to Israeli companies or if they've been purchasing Israeli products so far. Wow. So the party that proposed the resolution, the Social Democratic Alliance, has a majority in the city council, but not in the Icelandic parliament. The city council has in the past adopted a resolution acknowledging the rights of the Palestinians to independence and a sovereign country of their own. It has criticized what it calls the Israeli government's racist apartheid policy. A little bit more news here. I started reading this survey a few days ago, but very interesting. Okay, the makeup of Israel today, the nation, 6 million Jews and over 1.5 million Arabs and then others living there make up the total population. So the Jewish population is maybe 15% now ultra-Orthodox? Is it that high now? And maybe a total of 20, even 25% that would be Orthodox or moderately Orthodox. And then the rest would be not as religious and many downright non-religious. So the Sabbath for them, that's a rest day. That's beach day. That's just a day off on the weekend. It's not a holy day. And even though Israelis will get much more religious during this time of the year, the high holy days, for the most part, it is not primarily a religious nation. It is more secular than religious. So Tel Aviv is like any other worldly city in the world. So the religious Israelis, though, have a lot of clout because they make political alliances. If you're going to come into power, you have to have 61 out of the 120 Knesset seats, the Israeli parliament. You have to have the majority. So by having the majority, you can now get the election. So you vote for Netanyahu's party, Likud, you vote for this party, that party, but then they have to make a coalition because nobody gets that many seats. So you may have to work with the ultra-religious parties. Maybe they represent 10 or 12 seats, but you have to work with them to get your coalition, and they're going to want government funding. They're going to want exemption from military. They're going to want control over marriages and things like that. So many Israelis don't like that. So according to this article, Times of Israel, according to this, 95% of secular respondents are dissatisfied with the government's handling of religious issues, with large majorities favoring civil marriage or civil unions and official recognition of non-Orthodox conversions. Because right now, the only way you're fully recognized as a Jewish convert is if the conversion was Orthodox, and your marriage is only fully recognized in Israel. You can marry outside of Israel, but in Israel, only if there's an Orthodox wedding. The survey also reported dissatisfaction with religious policy among 81% of Haredi Israelis. These are the ultra-Orthodox. Despite the fact that ultra-Orthodox parties regained control over the Religious Affairs Ministry and the powerful Knesset Finance Committee following the March elections. Since then, the parties have set about rolling back several reforms adopted by the previous government by removing the teeth from a law drafting Haredi men into the military and repealing a conversion reform passed last year. When the Haredim are unhappy, they're unhappy about something different than why the secular Israelis are unhappy, Rabbi Uri Gerev, the Chedush CEO, told JTA, Jewish news agency. To many of them, Israel is not giving them enough, not enforcing their prerogatives enough, not enforcing Shabbat observance. In other words, the ultra-Orthodox Jews say, look, this is a Jewish nation. You have to enforce Sabbath observance. We are the key to the success of the nation as we study and pray all day, that we are the key to the success of the nation, and we are the lifeblood of the nation, and you need to support us and stand with us and finance our full-time study and keep our men out of the military and make Israel respect the laws of God more. And the rest of the nation is saying, what are you trying to impose on us? What are you trying to put on us? Yeah, we're a Jewish state, but we were not founded as a religious Jewish state. And yes, we honor our background and our tradition, but we're not all religious Jews. And we think that you're just sucking our finances. We think that you're just sapping our finances. We think that you are just, you don't want to serve in the military. You don't want to work. You just want to study and pray all day. And we resent that. And you're making it harder on us. And you don't care about making progress, and you just have your big families, and you live in relative poverty to keep your traditions and not have to worry about the rest of the world, and it's not helping our country move forward, and you're extremist fundamentalists, and a lot of you are hypocrites, so there's a lot of tension. And what's the resolution? Well, the same answer for everything, the Messiah. It's the same answer for everything. The Messiah, the Messiah, the Messiah, the Messiah, the Messiah. As Israelis come to faith in the Messiah, secular Israelis and ultra-Orthodox Jews, as they come to faith in the Messiah, then there will be harmony. Outside of that, it's a difficult situation. It's an inevitable clash between the liberal secular Israelis and the very conservative ultra-religious Israelis. It's a big conflict. All right, friends, visit the website, AskDrBrown.org. We've got a tremendous offer for my entire 18-hour class on prophets and prophetic ministry, including some messages from Leonard Ravenhill. We're giving it away, $10 for the download. Yeah, I'm serious. AskDrBrown.org. Take advantage of it. My bottom line today, the many complex problems in Israel have one solution and one solution only. His name is the Messiah, Jesus.